This is Persuasion in Business, hosted by me, Dr. Mindy Weinstein. I'm a marketing researcher, the author of The Power of Scarcity, a professor, and a marketer myself. In this podcast, you'll discover practical tools based on psychology you can use to improve your business, sales, and career today. Did you know playing hard to get helps in business? This episode of Persuasion in Business gets into the psychological factors involved in unavailability and what that means to you professionally. Why would turning down a job get you more money? Well, today I have your answer. A friend of mine, Catherine, she wasn't looking for a new job. She had been a director at her organization for nearly 5 years when she was contacted by a CEO of a well-respected company within her industry. Catherine met the CEO, Angela, 2 years prior at an industry conference and had only kept in contact briefly. Angela's email to Catherine stated that she wanted to schedule a Zoom meeting within the next 2 weeks, but didn't give a specific reason as to why. Catherine was curious, so she agreed to the meeting, as I think we all would if we got a random email from a CEO asking for a Zoom meeting. Well, as the meeting began, Angela got straight to the point. She was looking to hire a new director and had been impressed with Catherine's work and reputation within their field. She wanted to know if Catherine would be interested in interviewing for the position. Now, Catherine was a little surprised, to say the least, and being someone who is cautious, said she would think about it. Angela said she would follow up with more information about the position for her to review. The thing was, Catherine was happy at her job. She had a great team and loved the day-to-day rhythm she had created within her role. But as Angela promised, she followed up with more details about the position and asked if Catherine had given it any more consideration. Catherine answered that she was still thinking about it. This surprised Angela a little bit. I don't think this was something that Angela was used to hearing, especially when she's talking about a job at her company at a director level. What Angela did was she replied with a little bit more persuasive messaging than she had been using before when communicating with Catherine. She provided more reasons to consider the move to her organization, including the great employee benefits, a more prestigious role, and higher pay. For Catherine, though, while these were all great advantages, she hadn't been in the mindset to leave her job. The fact that Catherine hadn't jumped on the new prospect only fueled Angela's desire to hire her. Eventually, Catherine agreed to an interview. She was a little anxious, but not as much as she would normally be for a job interview. I remember when we talked about it, she said, you know, she had a little bit of nervousness, but she didn't really need the job. That was the difference. This was a company that was actively recruiting her. She was just as content to stay where she was. When Catherine arrived at Angela's company, she was greeted by the HR manager, Owen, and brought into the conference room to join a few other people, including another director, Jeremy, and of course, Angela. By all accounts, the interview went well. Catherine articulated her experience, and she answered all of the questions with confidence. She also had good chemistry with the team, with all of them, Owen, Jeremy, and Angela. In less than a week, Catherine was offered the role at Angela's company, and the salary was slightly higher than what she was currently making. Although Catherine was intrigued by the new opportunity and had felt that she hit it off with the others in the interview, she was still hesitant. She was hesitant about accepting the offer. She told Angela that she needed to think about it. This shocked Angela. But what shocked her even more was when Catherine eventually turned down the job. In response, Angela came back with an offer that included a significantly higher salary. Interesting scenario. What's even more interesting about the scenario is that there are psychological principles at play. And we are going to unpack those and discuss what that means to you in your business life, in your profession, in your sales. And there's really two psychological principles in this example. The first one, we value something more when we think it is unavailable or hard to get. That might sound a little bit familiar because we did talk about scarcity and how that makes items more valuable. It is along those lines, but we're going to talk about it through a different perspective. The second principle, our emotions intensify when a goal is difficult to obtain. Let's get into the first principle. We value something more when we think it is unavailable or hard to get. A theory that dates back to 1968 explains this concept the best. And this theory is known as commodity theory. The original framework of this theory focused on the psychological effects of unavailability. According to this theory, a commodity... Actually, let me pause. Let me first define what a commodity is per this theory. A commodity based on this particular theoretical framework can be just about anything. It can be a message. It can be an experience. It can be a material object. It's really anything that's useful that we can possess. Okay, let me get back to commodity theory. A commodity will be valued to the degree that it is unavailable to us. In this context, valued means an increase in perceived desirability. We see commodity theory at work in commerce. Consumer products that are hard to find tend to be viewed as more valuable. Commodity theory is pretty popular among researchers, and it's something that they have studied for decades. For example, it's been found that unavailability of an item can increase someone's attention. Based on commodity theory, researchers have concluded that people are motivated to obtain those hard-to-get items. Here's where things get a little bit more, shall I say, fun or interesting. But commodity theory has even been used to explain why people at a bar thought others were more attractive as the night went on. Yes, there was actually a study done at a bar, and it was in Sydney, Australia. I'm sure you've heard of beer goggles before, but what I'm about to explain to you is different, or at least that's what the researchers believe. It also involves a phenomenon known as closing time effect. As I already mentioned, the study was conducted in Sydney, Australia, and it was at a popular bar. The researchers approached participants throughout the bar and explained that they were conducting an experiment on social perceptions. If those people chose to participate in the study, they would complete a short questionnaire three different times within the evening, one at 9 p.m., one at 10:30, and again at midnight. And the questionnaire would ask them their perceptions of other bar patrons. If they chose to participate, they were given a glow stick to wear on their wrist, which identified them as part of the study. Now, throughout the evening, the researchers did use a breathalyzer to measure participants' blood alcohol content, just to make sure that they were looking at that too throughout the night. There were about 150 people who agreed to be part of the study. I don't think that's bad at all. Maybe it's the fact that they got to wear glow sticks on their wrists. I'm not really sure, but pretty good amounts of people that were willing to give their time. However, by midnight, there were only 87 participants left, and it was their data that was used in the study findings. As the night went on, the participants did rate other people as more attractive. However, this happened with those who were in relationships and those who were single. The researchers found that people in a serious relationship showed a closing time effect equivalent to participants who were single. And here's the explanation that the researchers gave. The mere perception of unavailability and how it relates to value is what caused those people remaining in the bar to look and appear more attractive. As people started to pair up and leave the bar, individuals became scarcer, unavailable. Therefore, they were more attractive. The unavailability grew. From a business perspective, does this mean we make ourselves appear unavailable? Oh, you want to hire me to help you with your project? No, thank you. Okay, that's not what I mean. I'll explain, but I first want to get into another study. This one is a bit older. It's from 1975. This study did not involve a bar. It involved cookies. In this study, there were 146 female students in an introductory psychology class in North Carolina. I love the rationale that the research team gave in describing why they only chose women. And the way they described it was also very formal. The use of female subjects was based on practical rather than theoretical reasons. There was a greater number of female than male subjects available when the study was conducted. Fair enough. As the study began, 12 of the students were removed because they refused to eat cookies or became a little too suspicious. This part of the study actually made me laugh a little bit because you can just imagine the scenario. You know, you have each participant in a room, they're offered cookies, and right away they're wondering, why are you giving me that cookie? I don't want your cookie. But anyway, so 12 of them were removed. So here's how the experiment was set up. When walking into the research room, the student was met by an experimenter who led her to a table. On the table was a can of Dutch butter mints, a package of cigars, and a glass jar containing either 2 or 10 chocolate chip cookies. The researcher explained that the experiment was about identifying variables that affect a person's preferences for various consumer goods. The student was also told that she would be asked to sample various items and to rate them on a number of dimensions. She was even told that there were several consumer preference studies being run on the same products at the university. The researcher then said that the first item to be rated would be cookies. Here's the thing you need to know. There were various conditions in this experiment. For instance, there was a demand condition, meaning the cookies would be viewed as high demand. There was an abundance condition, meaning there were plenty of cookies, and an accidental condition where cookies ran out by accident. Let's get back to the research room. Remember, the participant was told she would be rating various items starting with that jar of cookies. At this point, without the participant knowing, the researcher pressed a hidden button that alerted the second researcher who had been waiting in an adjoining room. When signaled, the second researcher entered the room carrying a jar of cookies, similar to the one already on the table. He apologized for interrupting and asked the first researcher if he had enough supply of cookies. The second researcher, remember, this guy just walked in. His jar only had 2 cookies left, but the jar on the table had 10. This second researcher explained that his participants had eaten more of his cookies than he had expected, and he asked the first researcher if he could get some additional cookies. The first researcher agreed and suggested that they simply exchange jars. The jars were swapped, and the second researcher left the room. The exchange of jars meant that the participant's jar, which initially had 10 cookies, now only had 2, and that's important. The researcher then returned to the cookies and asked the participant to taste one. After trying the cookie, she was asked to rate it. According to the study, the cookies that were in low supply were rated as more desirable than the cookies that were in abundant supply. Meaning, when this participant in this particular condition that I described to you went from having 10 cookies to 2 cookies, all of a sudden, they weren't as available, and she viewed those cookies as being better. While this study involved cookies and the other one involved a bar, the results were similar. Perceived unavailability made the commodity more attractive or desirable. What would happen if instead of immediately agreeing to an offer of some type, you simply said you needed to think about it? That's really what we're seeing in this theory. And that is exactly what one of my students did. Alexa was an accounting major, and she was at the point in her college career that she was looking for an internship. She applied at 2 different firms. One of them was her number one choice, but she definitely was going to be more than happy to work for either. The one that was her number one choice was a bigger firm and one that was known nationally. She had gotten an offer from the smaller firm, which she was excited about, but she held off because she wanted to know what this larger firm was going to come back with. She ended up with a phone call from the principal of this larger accounting firm, and he offered her the internship. He explained what the rate of pay was and gave her some other details and asked if she was ready to get started. But her response surprised him. She came back with the comment of, "Thank you for offering me the position. The rate, however, is lower than what I was offered from another firm, which has already made me an offer. If you don't mind, as much as I appreciate your willingness to hire me, I would like to take some time to think about it." The principal, I don't think, was used to getting that kind of response from interns and got a little quiet and then just said, "Okay, I'll give you the time you need." Well, he actually didn't wait very long. The next day, he ended up calling Alexa and told her, "Hey, listen, I talked to our HR manager. I told her what you said about the rate you were offered at the other company. And we have decided to not only increase the rate that we're offering you, but to also give that same rate to all of our interns. So across the organization, interns will now get paid more." And that was a really interesting response that Alexa was excited to get from the principal. And she ended up taking the job offer, and she's still working for that firm today. In that story I just told you, there's some of that same commodity theory at play, because when something is unavailable, it becomes more attractive or desirable. So in this situation, Alexa appearing a little bit more unavailable because she had another offer, she was offered a higher rate, all of a sudden, there's more desire to hire her. But there's another principle that was at work in that story, which we're going to talk about now, which goes with the overall concept of today's episode. Our emotions intensify when a goal is difficult to obtain. This is a different theory, though. It's called emotional intensity. According to this theory, our emotional intensity is tied to the difficulty of attaining a particular goal. So in that example I just explained with Alexa, the goal of this firm was to hire her. That was what the principal wanted to do. Yet, when it became a little harder to achieve that goal, emotions began to intensify. He took action. He went to the HR manager and said, "Hey, listen, let's raise the rate." So something occurred because of that. If a goal is easy to attain, our emotional intensity is low because it doesn't take much effort from us. But on the flip side, if a goal is extremely difficult, our emotional intensity might still be low because the goal seems so unrealistic and really not worth our time. In essence, we just stop caring. It's only the moderate goals that will cause our emotions to intensify because the goal is challenging, but there's hope and belief that we can achieve it. Emotion is thought to operate like a motivational state. At the same time, it's also believed that emotions tend to involve an urge. Whether that's fear or anger, the emotion causes an urgency to take a particular action. Emotions motivate us to attain a goal or an outcome. Psychologists believe that the motivational system is designed to conserve energy, and that's why easy goals don't cause intense emotions, and also why those really hard goals don't either. A great example of a business using unavailability and playing on emotional intensity is Nike, specifically Nike shoes. Nike is known for doing different collaborations, and they are also known for selling out quickly. That's why there's a whole secondary market for the shoes. You hear the term sneakerheads. Again, it's a whole thing. There was a collab that Nike did, and it was with a contemporary New York artist, Tom Sachs. Many Nike shoes sell out quickly, as we already know. I don't think I'm telling you anything new. But when we take a closer look as to how Nike uses unavailability to market itself, we can begin to reverse engineer the approach and apply it to our businesses. I want to tell you a little bit about the Nike and Tom Sachs collab as an example of this. In May 2022, Nike and Tom Sachs announced the Nike Craft General Purpose Shoe. On a side note, I want to describe the ad for the shoe because it's brilliant. So I'm going to get a little bit off of the topic here, but this is well worth it. The headline of this ad read, "Creativity is the enemy. Just because you can doesn't always mean you should. Resist newness for newness' sake. Build on a proven foundation and innovate incrementally. Study what came before, its shape, its weight, its colors, who it's for, and what it does. And it goes on, but the imagery of this ad, I know you can't see it because you're on a podcast, but it's the shoe, which it's yellow, the shoe that is in the picture, has creativity as the enemy, very big as a headline, and then it has the text underneath. Basically, with this collaboration, instead of trying to be innovative and new and so outside the box, they decided to go more old school and go with how shoes used to be. And for there not to be such a big focus on, hey, look at my shoes. The reason I'm even telling you about this as a side note is sometimes in business, you know, we look at constantly for things that we can just do that are new. Well, what if we looked at what was old and worked and see how we can just improve upon that? Okay, back on track. Let's talk about Nike and do some reverse engineering. This particular shoe, so this collaboration, they pre-announce the product, just like they do very often when they are about to drop a new shoe. And based on what consumers know already from previous experience with Nike, most likely the shoe would be hard to get, meaning it would sell out. In June 2022, the shoe was released, and of course, it sold out. Fast forward to August. August 1st, Tom Sachs announced on Instagram that more shoes would be released in just 4 days. So August 5th, the shoes were going to be released again. And I don't think I have to even tell you what happened, but I will anyway. The shoes sold out. But that announcement also was a subtle hint of the product's unavailability. And it would activate emotional intensity. There's a goal that exists. There's a moderate chance that you can achieve that goal. You're going to feel some emotions. August 5th, there was already a post on Tom Sachs' Instagram again that said the shoe was sold out, but to watch for more releases this year. And since that time, there's been a lot of activity, including a blog with the headline, How to Score Limited Edition Tom Sachs Nike General Purpose Sneakers, which not only alerted readers of another drop on September 1st, but also warned them to act fast. Based on emotional intensity theory, goals will cause us to feel a more intense side of our emotions. But for this to happen, these goals have to be important to us. Back to my example with Catherine. Even though it wasn't intentional, she had played hard to get. Another way to look at it is that Catherine was unavailable. When something or someone is unavailable, the value goes up. You've heard me say that before, but it's that important that I have to say it again. In Catherine's situation with the job offer, she was unintentionally playing hard to get. In terms of relationships and human interactions, playing hard to get has often been associated with the idea of unavailability. There was a group of researchers who conducted a set of 3 studies to test whether potential dating partners became more desirable when they are perceived as hard to get. In each of the studies, participants interacted with another research participant, or at least that's what they thought, but the other person was really just a member of the research team. The participants were then asked to rate the degree to which they felt the other person was hard to get, their perception of the other person's value, and their desire for that person. When the potential partner was considered to be less available, his or her value and desirability increased. To put it simply, the research showed that we find someone more attractive and desirable when they're unavailable to us. Yet there has to be some interest there first. In Catherine's example, her work and reputation caused Angela to try to recruit her. Yes, playing hard to get helped, but there was already value there. I mean, this does sound a little bit like dating, right? A couple years ago, I had a conversation with Dr. Jeremy Nicholson, who is known as the attraction doctor. He's done a lot of research on dating dynamics, and he does agree that unavailability can cause others to want you more. But he doesn't believe it's in the best interest to purposely play hard to get. He teaches people that they need to value themselves first and not sell themselves short. We saw this again, in Catherine's example, she wasn't intentionally trying to play hard to get. She was just valuing herself. She liked her job. She was being genuine. So when we are looking at these examples and going with what Dr. Nicholson had explained to me, we need to focus on our specific uniqueness. What makes us unique? What makes us different? What makes us valuable? Doing so makes unavailability become genuine because you value yourself more. Additionally, like from a dating perspective, you're not going to waste your time with someone who isn't a good match. So truly, you do become unavailable. Genuine unavailability leads to retention in dating and better relationships. But this isn't just dating relationships and romantic situations. This is really applied in interpersonal dynamics. And these exist in business interactions and personal interactions. Here's a little recap on how you can apply these psychological principles. Remember that we value something more when we think it's unavailable or hard to get, and that was commodity theory. Our emotions intensify when a goal is difficult to obtain. That was emotional intensity theory. But what does this mean in a business environment? It might mean that you let clients know you have limited availability. Be honest though. If you're only taking so many clients on at a time, tell prospects that. It's okay. You're being genuine. Will you need to wait to start that new project because you're in high demand? Don't be afraid to say that. Not sure if you're ready to take that job offer? Take the time to think about it. That's okay. And also, don't be afraid to mention if you've received multiple job offers. In all of these scenarios, you are communicating unavailability, but in a genuine way. And because if the goal was to hire you, to work with you, to engage you on another project, emotions are going to intensify for that person who does want to engage with you. I have one last example that I want to give you of unavailability because this one just blows my mind and it caught my attention. There is an agency, they're a branding agency in the Netherlands, and they took the concept of unavailability to a whole nother level. When you go to their website, you're greeted with a black screen with text on the left side and a form on the right side. And this is what the text says. Access only for exclusive audience. Dear visitor, we thank you for visiting our website. Due to our policy, our website is only accessible for an exclusive audience, group of clients, which we have carefully selected. We believe that delivering the highest quality can be achieved by restraining quantity. We only work with and for the premium and high-end luxury market. In order to obtain access to our website, you can fill in the form displayed here on the right. In case access is permitted, you will receive personal login codes to enter our website. That might be a little bit extreme, like I already said. Definitely catchy. I can't tell you if it's working for them or not, but it is interesting nonetheless. So from everything that we talked about, you can take the approach of being honest and being genuine about your availability. You can also take the approach of Nike and the collab that they had with Tom Sachs. You can pre-announce something new that is coming. You can remind people right before the launch. If you sell out, you can let people know. You can do all of this through social media and your website. And what you're doing is you're letting people know about the possible unavailability. And you're also causing emotions to intensify among your target audience. At this point, are you wondering what Catherine did? Whether she took the job or not? Because I never told you. And the answer is yes, she did take the job. And she's been working there for quite a few years now, and she's happy in her new role. Well, now you know why turning down a job could get you more money. Join us for the next episode as we dive into more on the psychology of persuasion. Have you ever played hard to get in a business setting or made a product or service harder to get? I know I have. Visit the Persuasion and Business Forum at persuasionnextsteps.com and share your thoughts. And I would love it if you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram.